Blog Talk Radio.
Come explore the lives of Black people, the famous, the everyday, the extraordinary, and hear stories that speak volumes about our heritage. As we near the end of Black History Month, we'll listen to the stories of NAACP President Ben Jealous, noted historian and African-American scholar Dr. John Hope Franklin, Los Angeles-based El Reno, mortician Sam Reed, and shoeshine boy turned teacher Earl Reynolds Jr. Black history is American history. This is going to be a show that you're going to really think about and share with your friends and ultimately come up with your own story, regardless of your ethnicity. This is Carol Copeland Thomas, and you're listening to Focus on Empowerment. Hello, my friends. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm back at my home base and enjoying this experience. I have a little bit of a cold, but we're going to muddle through it. We're at the end of Black History Month, and for some, it's something that they just think about in February, and for many of us, it's something that we live throughout the course of our lives. And I'd like for you to just, first of all, reflect on just past visionary people, people who lived 100-plus years ago, people who lived under extraordinary set of circumstances with oppression and discrimination and racism running rampant in the United States, yet they had dreams, such as Carter G. Woodson. Dr. Carter G. Woodson, born in Virginia, lived until 1950, was educated, received a doctorate degree, and in 1915 had the bright idea to start what was first Negro History Week, to pay tribute and homage to all of the African-Americans who had come before him and were living at that point in time, for the inventions, for the stories, for the documentation, for the bravery and the courage that they had withstood, and to pay tribute and to celebrate those individuals. What started off as Negro History Week, shortly after that, or at least in the coming decade, should I say, became Black History Month, a month that we celebrate in the United States in the month of February. In the United Kingdom, Black History Month is celebrated in October, and I know that because of my friend and colleague Garth Dallas and how many celebrations are conducted in the UK in the month of October. So Black History Month, whether you're in the United States or whether you're in the United Kingdom or other places, is an important way to show the African diaspora and to show the contributions that they have made to a society. And I am a big one to say that Black history is American history. You cannot look at the United States. I say this emphatically. You cannot look at the United States unless you contribute and you look at the contributions, the sacrifices, the ups and the downs of African-American people. You just can't look at this country because we've always been here from the 1600s throughout. And so with that said, I am excited about the five different people that we're going to showcase and highlight on this program. These are going to be very special recordings that have been made through a nonprofit, an independent nonprofit organization called StoryCorps. And StoryCorps was started in 2003 specifically to capture and archive the stories of everyday people and those who are extraordinary. In addition to African Americans, they have 400,000, I believe, stories that they have documented and have on archive. It's either 40,000 or 400,000. It's a very big number of stories that they have archived and are keeping at the Library of Congress for safekeeping for many, many decades to come. These are stories that are heartwarming, that will just make you think about your own family members, your own relatives, your colleagues, those people who you admire, and then also individuals who are notable, such as Ben Jealous and Dr. John Hope Franklin. We're going to share with you these very quick 1 or 2 minute vignettes, and then give you a sense of your own history. I'm a diversity speaker and consultant, and I really believe as I grow older, the power of stories and how you can learn so much just by capturing your essence, capturing that particular incident in the midst of a story. So for this very special Black History Month tribute earlier this month, and I would encourage my listeners listening live and those who are in the chat room, hello to my friends in the chat room. Go back and listen to some of the other episodes that we've done earlier this month. Last week we talked about sickle cell disease, what it is, how it impacts families and people as well. We also earlier talked about the voter limitation bills that are sweeping the country and what it means, particularly to the African American community. And so you can go back throughout the month and pick and choose different topics and issues we have talked about and highlighted with Black History Month. But today we're going to talk about the people and just talk about some of these remarkable individuals who have shared some wonderful, wonderful stories with us. And I think I'm going to start off, first of all, with a story that was captivated by Earl Reynolds. I don't know Earl, but he is a teacher. He was educated in college. His father was a barber, and he tells a wonderful, wonderful story about meeting James Brown, what it was like to meet James Brown, the kind of person that he was, and how he walked into his father's barbershop and wanted a shoe shine, and one thing led to another, and the rest is history. So we're going to just pull this up, just give me just a few minutes, just a few seconds. We're going to pull this story up and then share the story of Earl Reynolds. So stand by and let's hear this wonderful, remarkable story. It takes about 2 minutes and then we'll talk about some of the others who are a part of StoryCorps. 1 second.
He immediately walked over to my dad's barbershop. And he just started shaking hands and talking to people. And he looked down at me and he said, "You must be the bootblack." In barbershop vernacular, that is, you shine shoes. And he said, "Well, come on back here and shine my shoes." Of course, his shoes were already shined. He was immaculate from head to toe. So I went through the process of re-shining his shoes. And he got off the shoe shine stand and he handed me a $5 bill. And he told me that back in his hometown, he started out shining shoes. He said, "It's an honorable profession. It's good work. You just need to think about now what else you want to do with your life." That was my first step along to my education. I know that your granddaddy was counting on me to take over the barbershop. You know, I'm his son, his only son. And he was grooming me for that. But one day, I had this big announcement to make to your granddaddy that I wanted to go to college and not take over the barbershop. So I finally got the nerve to talk to him about it. And for months, your granddaddy did not speak to me. That's how big his disappointment was. I applied to colleges and universities on my own. I had to learn how to fill out forms on my own. And I got a letter from Fayetteville State Teachers College in Fayetteville, North Carolina, saying that we'd like for you to come. I remember piling into your Uncle James station wagon, and they took me down there and dropped me off, and I watched them drive away. And I said, "Okay, now what are you going to do?" I was fortunate to graduate in the top of my class, and Granddaddy came to graduation. Well, as you know, one of his famous sayings was, "Life is a process of adjustment." So when your late grandma told me he was coming, I knew that we had reconciled. We had finally bridged that gap.
Now, a good friend of mine sat with me and he cried. He told me a story. I know he had lied. Said he went for a job, and this man said, "Without an education, you might as well be dead." Now, don't get me wrong.
That is such a cool story. That's a story from Earl Reynolds, Jr., shoeshine boy turned teacher, taking the advice of Mr. James Brown. And I remember when James Brown passed away, the people who were around him and the people who were just speaking so highly of him, they always called him Mr. Brown. They didn't call him James. They called him Mr. Brown as a sign of respect. And here, who would have ever realized that he touched the lives of Earl Reynolds? And Earl was actually telling this story to his daughter, Ashley. That's why he refers to your grandfather. The wonderful thing about StoryCorps, and I would encourage you to go to their website, find out how you can become a part of it. They have various listening mobiles that go around the country. I believe they're going to be in Atlanta in some part of March. And you can sign up for an appointment if you have a specific story that you want to tell about your life, the life of one of your relatives. You can do so through StoryCorps. But the wonderful thing is that they're just not looking at them capturing stories. They want you to capture your story as well. And you can go to the website and find out how to do it, how to generate the questions, how to get the equipment together, how to do it in a way where you can do your own archiving and share that with your particular family. You can go to StoryCorps.org, and find out more about it. And again, the stories that they are capturing, thousands of stories that they are capturing, they are actually archiving them and keeping them at the Library of Congress. This is very similar to the stories that were captured, the slaves who were still living in the 30s when we were in the recession during that time, and the federal government started a capturing process, an archival project to put people to work, a lot of teachers and educated individuals and folks who had real skills in terms of interviewing techniques. They were put to work, and they interviewed hundreds of slaves who were still living. And those slave recordings, I'm actually going to probably pull some up and play them over the next couple of weeks, or play a couple of them over the next couple of weeks. They are also archived in Washington, D.C. at the Library of Congress. So this is a similar kind of idea, capturing the stories, the dramatic issues that took place with people both living and non-living, and StoryCorps is doing a remarkable job with it. It's just a wonderful opportunity. Now, here's another story. I didn't actually promote it, but I'm going to play it, and there's a little bit of music afterward. All these stories have music after it. It's by Mildred Bond Roxborough. She worked for the NAACP, the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, for 50 years, and she shares a pretty interesting story that took place when she was working and traveling in Arkansas, working with the branch in that particular part of Arkansas. So stay tuned and listen to her, just a pretty, pretty interesting story. Stay tuned. Mildred Bond Roxborough.
I was making my way across the state of Arkansas in July and August, the hottest months, getting parents to sign petitions to get their local school integrated. I was supposed to speak to the branch. You always had to speak to the units. So I wanted to take a bath, and there was a tin tub. It was about 2 feet deep and large enough to wash clothing in. That's what the tub was intended. Anyway, I decided that I wanted to sit down and get the water over me because I was hot and dusty. But then I couldn't push myself up from the tub. I was just stuck. So I called my host, and she could not get me from the tub. So she went out and conferred, and they decided that they would take me into the backyard so they could pour the water from the tub. The backyard had a wire fence, and people were walking along the sidewalk, and they stopped to watch this spectacle. Eventually, they were able to pull me up out of the tub. Then people applauded, and they put something over me, and I went back into the house. That night at the meeting, I was introduced by the branch president, and I approached the podium, and someone in the audience arose, and he said, "You know, Mr. President, we have already met Miss Bond. We saw her earlier today And she looks as good in clothing as she did with none on.
Now, you talk about risque. That is a real interesting story. Again, there are many, many stories like that. I have actually gone to the African-American section, the griot section, where all of the African-American stories are captured and held, and there are countless ones. And I think if you just want to have a break from your day, and maybe if you're having a real hectic day and you just need to just zone out, this is a great place to zone out, get reconnected with history, check out some of the wonderful individuals and the stories that they have to share. Another story I want to share with you, I think I'm going to move on now to Ella Reno. She is a woman who lives, she's 72 years old, and she lives in Los Angeles, and she's talking to a friend of hers. So you see the picture of her on my blog. And if you're getting this, you can actually go to my blog, Tell Carol, TellCarole.com, and you'll see the pictures of all the people except Mrs. Roxborough. I don't have her picture up there, but all the other pictures are there on the blog. And obviously, you can download this particular radio program as an archive and play it and share it with other people as well, and go to StoryCorps so that you can listen. So this is a story of Ella Reno, and she was hot and heavy for a young man. Her parents, I guess, figured she was a little bit too young for whatever was going on with them, and they whisk her off to Louisiana to see her great-grandmother. And so this story talks about Ella Reno. Stay tuned.
I was in love with Tyrone. My relationship was heating up, and my parents knew that, so they had to take charge. Mother told me we would be spending the summer in the South, and that's where I was going to be introduced to my great-grandmother, Sylvia. She was 106 years old, and I just did not want to be spending my time with a senile old woman. But 4 days later, we were in Farmerville, Louisiana. Driving on this old road, I saw this log cabin, and I noticed on the front porch, that was her. She had a slender, you know, almost frail frame, but I still found her to be regal looking. And at night, she would tell her stories. When the Civil War ended, she was my age. She was 16. She said even though she had freedom, not knowing how to read and write made her feel like a jigsaw puzzle with some of the pieces missing. And when she was 85 years old, she said, it stops here. She got help from grown-ups, you know, and sometimes from children, and she would study on her own. And then she told me that she had something special to show me. She went to a cedar chest at the foot of her bed, and she opened it up, and when I saw what it was, I was wondering, why is she bringing me this old tattered church fan? But when she turned it over, scrawled on the back of that fan, she had printed Sylvia. She told me that when she could spell her name, that was when she got her freedom. You know, she passed in 1965. But Grandma Sylvia is living on in my heart.
Another great story from StoryCorps, and there are many stories like that, many, many, many black people, African Americans who lived through the horrors of slavery and came out and had to literally start their lives all over again. In the case of Ella Reno and her great-grandmother, having to learn how to read at the ripe young age of 85, that I think is a great, great story. What kind of stories do you have in your family? You probably have a couple of thousand just tucked up in your head, things that you've forgotten, things that happened a long time ago, stories that can be meaningfully shared with other people on the job and off the job, stories that can have some relevance and sustenance, should I say, for those who are looking at their own lives and troubled and stressed and trying to figure out how they can make ends meet, how they can move from one day to the next. Sometimes a powerful story, a good story, is all you need to really turn the corner. The Bible uses a lot of stories. Biblical books use a lot of stories. The power of storytelling is just a remarkable opportunity to learn and to study and to grow and to share as a human being. And there are many, many stories in the African-American tradition. Many, many stories when you look at ways where we can move ahead together and certainly pay homage and tribute to those who have come before us. Now, the next story I'm going to share is a remarkable one. It is by a mortician and the caregiver of Oakland Cemetery. His name is Sam Reed. When he was a kid, they called him Sammy Reed. I wanted to pull this one out because he takes care of a very famous historic cemetery in Atlanta, Georgia, the Oakland Cemetery. And my great-great-great uncle is buried in that cemetery, Wesley John Gaines. He was the bishop in the African Methodist Episcopal Church, one of the founders of Morris Brown College, and is buried there with other relatives. So I thought it was pretty nifty to have the current or the near-current caretaker of that particular cemetery, who's also a mortician, just talk about why he's always been fascinated with that profession and why he became a mortician. So we're going to play Sam Reed now.
I remember one time in the first grade, my teacher, she was going around to everyone, and she asked them what they wanted to be. So she got to me, and she said, Sammy Reed. They all called me Sammy instead of Samuel. What do you want to be when you grow up? And I said, I want to be an undertaker. And everybody thought that was crazy. But I was always fascinated with the way a dead person looked when you went to see them. Coming up, you would listen to the elders talk about a person was killed in a car wreck and they was messed up and everything. But when you got to the funeral, you would hear them say, wow, grandma looked great. She looked at peace. And I wanted to know how to do that. And whenever I had a pet die, you know, I always would bury the pet on the side of the creek bank. I would have my little sisters, they would pick flowers, and we just stand around and have a little funeral, you know. So I just knew this is what I was destined to do, to deal with the dead. And I always get this, you don't look like an undertaker. And I said, well, what does an undertaker look like? They said they look dead, and they look old, and they drink a lot. I said, well, I'm not dead. I don't think I look old, even for my age. And I said, I don't drink. You know, a lot of people think because we're morticians and we're in the business dealing with this on a day-to-day basis that we're cold. But we react the same way when we lose a loved one. I mean, it's no different. And the best part is meeting the needs of the families. Their load should be just a little bit lighter. That's what I strive to do every day, to make people feel better.
That's Sam Reed, the mortician in the Atlanta area and also caregiver caretaker of Oakland Cemetery, a very historic cemetery. As we pay tribute to Black History Month, we're looking at the various lives of those people and the stories that they're telling. We're going to move on and play the story of Ben Jealous, who is the current president, national president of the NAACP. His story, along with his mom, Ann Todd Jealous, and her mother, Mamie Todd. We're going to now play the story of Ben Jealous.
I went up to the secretary's desk and said, I have an appointment. And she says, well, colored teachers come around the back. I said, beg your pardon? She said, colored teachers come around the back. I said, well, there's his desk right there. And so I walked on through it and went to his desk. He was sitting there. He didn't stand up. And there was a chair in front of his desk. So I sat there, and he and I had a conversation. And I just told him how I felt. I really felt about it. And he was a human being. I knew we had that much in common. And I wasn't afraid of him.
And were you ever afraid of anybody?
Well, I don't know. I have to think about it. Anyway, the next day, by 10:30 in the morning, a pickup truck came to school laden with materials. I mean, blackboards hanging over the sides. And I had everything I could think of that I had told him that school needed.
Well, we're talking about protests. Mom, tell me about desegregating your high school.
When I first went there, I remember being assigned a seat, and there was this other girl sitting in my seat. So I went up to say to her, you know, you're in my seat, and she fell onto the floor. She was so terrified. And then I remember... Probably more scary now. The rumor was that we all carried knives. And she was afraid that I would stick a knife in her for sitting in my seat. And actually, I was asking her to move because I was afraid of the teacher, you know, being upset.
Mimi, what was it like for you to watch her go through this?
It was very difficult, but she kept a lot of it to herself.
I did not want to burden them. I was an only child, and my parents talked a lot. And I grew up with their stories. And so I was very, very conscious of a great deal that they carried as a consequence of racism. So I kept as much as I could to myself.
Wow. Thanks, Mom.
You're welcome, Ben. Thanks for being interested.
Yeah.
And asking.
Thanks, Mimi.
Good luck to you, Dolly.
Yeah.
There's a lot to be done.
Yeah, that's
There's
right.
a lot left to be done.
That was Ben Jealous, his mom, Ann, and his grandmother, Mamie, or Mimi, as he says. I want to move on quickly and play the story of John Hope Franklin. John Hope Franklin, who passed away in 2009, famous historian, graduated from Fisk University in 1935. He was actually an upperclassman when my mother entered Fisk University in 1934. Here is John
Hope. It was my first year as a Boy Scout. Scouting had just come to the black community, and I'm in one of the first troops, and I'm very, very excited about fulfilling all of the obligations of the Boy Scout. And I've got so much enthusiasm, I've got so much anxiety to be the best Boy Scout I can possibly be. One of the admonitions that we had was that we had to do a good deed every day. And so I was downtown in Tulsa, standing at the street corner, waiting for the light to turn. And I got my eyes on people and things. What can I do to perform a good deed for the day? I've got to perform it. Just have to. And I saw this woman as she was stepping off the curb. She had a cane when she was feeling like that. And I said, oh, my goodness, she can't see. And so I walked up to her and I said, could I help you across? She said, oh, yes, I'm so glad. And she grabbed on my arm as though I was the last person on earth. We got our way halfway across the street. She's so happy and laughing and talking. And then she said, out in the middle of the street, she said, are you white or black? I guess she said colored in those days. And I told her I was colored. And she said, get your filthy hands off me. And I got my hands off her. And I reflected on that. That this woman who could not see and who was in desperate need of help was not as interested in help as she was in being certain that a young black man didn't touch her. And I knew then that we were in deep trouble to overcome that kind of racial hostility.
Thank you, Dad.
And that's John Hope Franklin, just a brilliant, courageous man. We're going to end the segment with music by the Chicago Children's Choir. I've actually heard them live singing Lift Every Voice and Sing by James Weldon Johnson. He was a famous black man. He lived many years ago, and this song is really called the Black National Anthem. I hope that you will celebrate every month. Wherever you happen to be, we'll go off with this song. We'll come back talking about Women's History Month in the next month for March. And thank you so much for listening to the program. Think about your own stories. Now we're going to hear from the Chicago choir, and we obviously will not be able to hear the entire song, but just a great, great rendition. Take care. Enjoy your week.